Hello, everyone. It's Chris here. It's just occurred to me as I sit down to start editing this episode of Being Very Sad that maybe releasing a podcast with the name Being Very Sad on a week like this where so many shitty things have happened in the world is maybe not a bad idea, but maybe they're not not the most sensitive thing I could have done. But Being Very Sad was never supposed to be about a discussion about the world at large. It's supposed to be, despite the name, a little bit of levity and some chat about culture and the things that people like, if anything. So I kind of hope that, if nothing else, that this podcast is something that people will enjoy and something that people will find funny. I'm sorry about the noise, by the way. I've got a window open because it's very hot in my recording studio phone booth room that I record in. But, I just wanted to people to understand that by calling the podcast that and not discussing the things that happened this week, I'm not trying to minify them or ignore them. It's just that's not what this show's about. This show's just a laugh. Fuck knows, on a week like this week, could do with one. So I'm sorry if you think otherwise, but I'd really like you to hear this because I think it's good. I think it's a good laugh. So cheers. Bye bye. Hello, everybody. Oh, my God, the sun's just come out and fucking blinded me. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Being Very Sad, a podcast that comes out occasionally when people can be bothered. This week, Chris Spann, me, is joined by someone else that isn't Andy. It's basically the next best thing to Andy. It's Sean Bell. Sean, say hello.
Oh, the next best thing. Thanks a lot, mate.
Well, effectively, it's
fucking
like
understudy. Jesus.
Andy wasn't available for this show, so we
that doesn't help. How's that?
We bought one. I mean, you're basically the same person, aren't you?
Two sides of the same coin, mate. That's
Also, special guest tonight is a ghost that's in Sean's house.
Yeah, there was a whoosh behind me and some furniture was rattling. So there you go, that's that. Yes.
So welcome to season 3 of the Parapod. Right, no, this is Being Very Sad, a podcast in which we talk about things that have made us very sad this week. Sean, what is thing number one that's made you very sad this week?
Thing number one that makes me very sad, particularly, I don't know why particularly this week, probably because you asked me for three things to be very sad about, and I arbitrarily conjured them. I'm very sad that you don't use the Crash and the Boys song, I Am So Sad, So Very, Very Sad, from the Scott Pilgrim movie as a sting in this show, because you don't like the movie.
Thank you.
Right, well, for those listening at home, you'll have now heard it, which now invalidates your point.
Right,
but
next
but crack on. what's the beef?
No, it's just when you first said you were doing this show and that you're going to be putting musical stings in it, I was like, oh, you need to use this, it's perfect, because the entire song is like 2 seconds long, and it's just, that's already, you know, all that work is done for you. It's about being sad, and it's in a brilliant film.
The last bit's not true, though, is it?
Why don't you like the Scott Pilgrim movie, Christopher?
Right. I don't like Michael Cera.
Sarah.
I don't like him, so don't say Sarah. I don't like him. I don't like the fact that it's very, very obviously massively compressed from like a far longer story, far more involved thing. Like literally, so there's some bits it's just like, oh yeah, and then this happened, but we don't really have the time or budget to do this. I hate the fact that Edgar Wright did that, and then Simon Pegg said it was the closest thing you'd get to a spaced movie. And I hate the fact, and I'm surprised that you like it, because it's all like, oh, games. If it came out now, people would be like, oh, no, games, no, don't games. It's basically fucking the precursor to that fucking Pixels film.
Oh, no, it isn't, though, because Pixels was just really cynical and bollocks, whereas Scott Pilgrim's actually written from a place of genuine love and knowledge.
Like, I will
like
admit,
Scott
I did,
Pilgrim,
I,
like, cause, right, to me, Scott Pilgrim sort of fully represents the world that video games allowed you to believe might exist when you were a kid. It's like, oh, do you know what? Complex emotional problems, batter some dickheads and get coins. Right? And that is, and there's a part of me that's like, as a kid was like, oh, yeah, that might be how things would work. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I've just noticed Sean McTiernan's popped online. It's like he can fucking hear me.
I was just thinking the exact same thing. somewhere, like, he's just felt something. He's going to appear on this call in a minute and just be like, right.
Roll his sleeves up.
Listen, lads.
I'm going to upset you even more, because it's been a long time since I've tried to watch it, but I've never been a big fan of Spaced either.
Really? Yeah. Why?
I just didn't find it that fucking funny.
Now, you see, it's interesting, right? Because what you're saying about... the shit film. What's it called? I wasn't listening. all I can think is Assassin's Creed. What the fuck's it called?
That will be a shit film, to be fair.
Yeah.
Go with it.
What is the film we're literally talking about?
Oh, Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim, maybe.
So it didn't occur to me that you'd forgotten that. I thought it must mean something else.
I've had a long day. The thing with Scott Pilgrim, you're saying, oh, that's what the world that video games let you believe exists.
Yeah.
So Spaced first came on the telly when I was about 12, I guess, something like that. And I thought Spaced was going to be what years 18 to about 25 were going to be like.
It's probably about right, isn't it?
Well, no, not really. Like, I didn't have any cool downstairs neighbours go on adventures or, like, go clubbing. I mean, I quit drinking, lost loads of weight, stopped going out.
You're doing it all wrong, mate.
Well, yeah. I didn't get upset about The Phantom Menace. Spaced just represents... I always liked it because it was always written as, like, the antithesis to Friends.
Yeah.
Because they always said that, like, in Friends, everybody's cool. Like, they all seem to work fairly... Certainly to begin with, like, fairly low-paid jobs. Mm. But, like, they can fuck off to London for 3 weeks for no reason whatsoever. Absolutely no issue. Mm. Whereas previously it was just like, oh, I don't know if I can afford a pizza. it represents...
that's an interesting point, because that is a thing that always bugs me in a lot of sitcoms. Master of None, which I love. I think it's an incredible piece of work. But the way they just slip in the fact that he did a commercial that runs forever and that's how it, and that pays for everything. It's like, so they just don't have to actually think about him having a normal life and he can just fuck around.
Yeah, I say there's episodes of Friends where Daisy gets a shit job through like some work placement scheme.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get Tim to lend her a tenner. in fairness, that's representative of kind of 18 to 25. But, you know, I didn't go to many, like, cool... Well, there weren't many cool parties in space. But, like, it wasn't... Because I didn't go to uni and stuff like that. I never had a feeling of that feeling of, like, oh, yeah, this is my artist's enclave that I live in now. Like, I just lived in a shit tiny house in Mould, which is near where I live now, with fucking doorways that were too small for me.
That's just most doorways, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but these ones were, like, significantly too short. Okay. Like, the doorways were about 5'10". Mm. And I lived in that house for 3 years, and it gave me a stoop.
Nice. Yeah. For the audience, I should just point out, that was a joke about Chris being broad-shouldered. I wasn't just going, ah, you're fat.
For those listening, I assumed that Sean was calling me fat, because privately he calls me fat all the time. I'm making shit up this evening. Like,
yeah, just going into imagination land. It's good.
Yeah, what's even better? There was something else you said. God, my memory's awful. There's something else I said before that I didn't mean at all. I just said it to be controversial.
With regards to Scott Pilgrim being somewhat truncated, the movie version. Yeah, but what do you want? Of course that was going to happen.
I want a three-film franchise, Sean.
Well,
I can only
obviously.
Enjoy...
Obviously that would be better, or, you know, a TV series or whatever, but they didn't get that. They got a film, and I believe they did what they could. It's like Watchmen.
Oh, fucking hell. I was joking when I said a three-part franchise.
Oh, okay. when Watchmen came out, and people sulked about it a bit, and it's like, we've been saying for 20 years that this is physically impossible.
Yeah.
Did all right. I mean,
it's interesting that that as a time recording, Preacher has kind of just started, and on the whole, does a decent job of honouring the original material, if not the themes, really. But it's too early to tell, in fairness.
Yeah.
But it does a decent job of honouring the original material without slavishly copying it, because there's a lot of stuff in there that you can get away with in comics in 1996, but not so much nowadays.
No. I mean, because the thing that's weird with the Preacher TV show is that they are truncating things like spatially as well as chronologically, in that they haven't left that one town yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, fine. Like the changes they've made, like you say, they could still preserve like all the good stuff. I think, like you say, I think a lot of the themes are going to get lost, which is a huge shame.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Walking Dead kind of did stuff that happened very, very late on in the comics, very early, and then has the opposite way around. The stuff that happens in a matter of episodes in the comics that took four or five seasons to actually happen in the books.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's very much a tribute to based on. But
yeah, you see, I watching the show has sort of made me want to go back to the books. When I was like, yeah, but then am I just going to watch the show? I'm like, oh, that's different. It's not the same as the books. But then, you know, I sat through all of Scott Pilgrim, and every time something different to the books happened, I was just like, well, we've only got another half an hour, so yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I'll admit I'm not particularly au fait with the books.
Okay.
But in that I've read none of them.
I mean, to be honest, the books get a bit fucking stupid towards the end and don't really make any sense. So in some ways, the film's an improvement.
No, I'm just not fond of Michael Cera. I do like the bit in the nightclub with the two dragons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You see, that whole bit is completely made for the film. That's nothing like that happens in the book.
Right.
And yeah, that bit is wicked. See, that's the other thing, is it perfectly encapsulates how you think being in a band will be, and it's fucking not. You know?
Yeah,
the fact that when they play in their own practice space in their living room, they're fucking amazing. There's all special effects going off everywhere. And then, but then when they're actually on a stage, they're just like timid idiots with rubbish songs.
Listen. Listen, right?
Yeah.
Stop it, because you're making me begin to think that I might be wrong.
I like that film, sorry.
Well, I'm beginning to think that I might do if I watched it again. And
well, we should do that. I've got it on Blu-ray. It's one of three films I own on Blu-ray. The other one's Red Cliff and Mad Max Fury Road.
Ah, Fury Road. There's a film worth owning on Blu-ray.
So there you go. That's the...
Mad Max is a film worth building a cinema in your spare room for, to be honest. But, do you know, actually, I'm gutted, actually. I missed the opportunity to go and see that in IMAX.
Really? I missed the opportunity to go and see that in an open-air cinema in fucking Greece.
Well, we're both a pair of cunts, aren't
yes.
we?
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. Scott Pilgrim actually might be better than I remember it being, and both Sean and Chris have missed the opportunity to go and see Mad Max in the optimum setting that they probably could do. Two things that make us very, very sad. Right, moving on. My first thing this week. I don't know why I keep saying week. The last one was about 3 months ago. I think the last one was before I got married. Thing that makes me sad this episode time. Fucking Spotify Discover.
What's wrong with Spotify Discover?
It doesn't seem to know what music I like, which is its only job.
Right, the thing is, here's my observation on this. So you, by and large, enjoy mine more than yours, yeah?
Yeah.
The thing with that is, you then come to me and go, oh, your place has got such and such on it, or such, they're really good. But surely what the playlist is trying to do is trying to make you listen to things you've not heard before.
Yeah, but it does a shit job of that.
And just because you've heard more things than I have, it's just... So, like, mine is able to cover ground that I haven't covered, but you have, whereas yours is just, like, shrugging its shoulders because you've exhausted all music.
The other week, it gave me two different versions of the same Beastie Boys versus Slayer song.
Okay, that's embarrassing.
Sorry, not Slayer, Beastie Boys versus Anthrax.
Even better.
Yeah. like, one after another as well. They weren't even spaced out in the playlist.
Doesn't yours make you listen to Muse as well?
Mine has made me listen to Muse. It's made me listen to the Foo Fighters. But, like, other than that, right, one, yeah. Ain't nobody discovering the fucking Foo Fighters today. Like, but second of all, apart from that, it just gives me really generic metalcore. Like, old bands called, like, fucking, like, She Writes in Shadows and fucking that stuff. And, like, all the, like, they haven't done a music video, but they've done a lyrics video. And there's a bit where it all goes silent and then the band chants something like you left me no choice for fucking 9 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just the most dread, like, I will admit it's thrown up a few bangers here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, like, it doesn't seem to know what music I like. I mean, like, I will admit, one year, you know when you do those Spotify, my year in music.
Yeah.
Things. One year, my one of those informed me that the thing I'd listened to most was the hidden track off the end of an album that I only remember listening to maybe once or twice that year. and the track is about 19 minutes of silence before it kicks into anything.
Brilliant.
So I don't know whether maybe I left it on in work or
I had this with Last FM. Is it Last right. FM? Nay, yeah. Audio Scrobbler. There was a Y album, and I think I'd left the room and I'd left this one song on repeat and just turned my speakers off and then went to bed. And it was like the next morning, it was like, you're the biggest Y fan on the planet, you nutter. You listen to this song more than anyone else in the world.
I'm looking now at my list of songs that I have discovered as a result of Spotify Discover.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not all that, but...
I presume you do the same thing as me, where you have like a best of. So as you're listening to it, you then just siphon off the best bits. And,
yeah. Mine's called This Is The New Shit.
Okay.
Which is a Marilyn Manson reference.
Mine's just called Discover Best Of. I feel like I need to raise my game now.
Well, I make a point of giving all my playlists clever names.
Okay.
My metal playlist is called Metallicock, which is a space reference, actually. My new metal playlist is called Unattainable Youth, which, ironically, recently, I took the Lost Prophets song off. I've got This Is The New Shit, Run Dem Nets, which is a Netrunner one, Songs By Me, which is Songs By Me, that one's not that clever, This Is The New Shit, and then I've got four different gym playlists. The most recent one is called For The Gym.
Hang on, four different gym playlists?
Yeah, I get bored of them.
Okay.
So I've got Thrashing Like A Maniac, that's another one.
I haven't got many playlists. I mean, I've got my Discover Weekly Best Of, and then I've got a couple from when I got married last August.
Mm.
So I've got Wedding Dinner Time and Wedding Party Zeit, and then I've got the playlist from the Midnight Resistance EGX meet from like 2 years ago, which is called Midnight Resistance Shag House.
Yeah. I've got quite a few. I've got Poppin' Candy, which is my pop playlist. Yeah. I've got Girls Can't Rap, which is female rappers. I've got How to Get an A at GCSE English, which has got Wait and Bleed by Slipknot on it, Organ Grinder by Marilyn Manson, and Untrue by Cold Chamber. And I don't know why. My playlists are full of back before Spotify did albums, though.
Yeah, I used to have a load of those, and then I cleared them out.
Yeah, there's no easy way to clear them out, I think, without using the web.
Yeah, it just took ages.
Yeah, I've got another one called Coffee and Eggs.
My favourite thing about Spotify is that if you go to browse your widgets on your Android smart telephone, and you look at the Spotify one, it's previewing a Wolves in the Throne Room track.
Bloody hell.
Which I'm a big fan of.
Actually, that's one thing Spotify does quite well. They're curated playlists.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, see, the problem that Spotify has with me is that I tend to like very specific parts of broader genres.
Yeah, I mean, I as much as I like my Discover Weekly, it does often give me like really shit post-rock, and there's a lot of really shit post-rock.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
The vast majority of it, in fact. And it's Yeah, and like sometimes it just plays metal at me because, oh, well, he likes Pelican, so he probably listened to High on Fire and stuff. It's like, so there you go.
Here we go. I'm trying to find... Where's that thing where it gives you the playlist of the stuff that you like? But, like, I do, because I get, like, a lot of metalcore players and stuff like that, but some of their punk... Like, the actual... The music in them is actually pretty good. Like, if you get, like, the punk playlists...
Yeah.
There'll be some shite in there, but, like, 95% of it will be, like, generally considered to be good punk rock, and, like, it has, you know, stuff like the Milkmen in there and
see, how do you get those play... Because whenever I get... You know, so when you load it up and it's, like, always some, like, sample curated playlist, I just get shit, like... Sunday chill out acoustic sets. Well, and fucking. Oh, yeah. Show me one called All Things Post. That's probably.
Oh, indie songs for slackers.
Well, that's. Yeah.
Heady beats.
This sounds like the sort of shit you listen to, though.
Atmospheric black metal.
See, I'm fine with that.
Feel good
that.
Indie rock. Minimalism.
I actually can't find the weird that playlist thing. Maybe it's gone, which is a shame because it was good. fuck, it seems to have completely disappeared. That's really
weird.
There's
one here, the most beautiful songs in the world.
Oh.
That's a bit of a...
But basically, mate, I'm fed up of listening to fucking Hatebreed.
Yeah.
Or rather, no, I'm fed up of Spotify trying to make me listen to fucking Hatebreed. I don't like fucking Hatebreed. But I know why it's given me Hatebreed. It's given me Hatebreed because of that time I spent 6 months listening to that one TRC song. In fact, I think that is the root of my issues, both in Spotify and life. Because I had that, and I had a period just when I moved, when we first moved into this house, and I was a bit stressed, and I got really into the song Music is Life by Elephant.
Right.
And I listened to that non-stop for about 6 months as well, because it was the only thing that made me feel a bit better. So between those, but then I'd never get any slightly odd pop music. So
yeah,
I don't know. Like, what's in Discover this week? Again, I mean, yours is better. We know that.
Mine's all right this week. Where are we? Let me bring it up again. No, that's the best of one. This is good radio, isn't it? there's a song by Crying, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Chiptune, lady singing over it. Well into that. There was Jordan Mason, who is this really pleasant folk song, slightly unusual vocals, and he opens with the line, "You fuck like a racehorse."
Very
and
good.
I was going to send that song to my dad until I realised they were the opening. But not, I don't think he would mind. I think it's just...
No, I say, you've got no proof that he does fuck like a racehorse either, have
well,
you?
Well, I'm here, so...
You know what I mean? You don't strike me as the sort of person who'd be the result of someone fucking like a racehorse.
Oh, thanks a lot, mate.
Well, no, just, you know, fucking like a horse, fine.
Yeah.
But a racehorse suggests a certain
what does
a certain panic
a
that you don't have
bring to it. I got a bit of Do Make Say Think, who they are like one of my favourite bands of all time. I've also listened to them a lot, so that's cheating. It's cool when you get things that you know you should listen to more and you've just never got around to it for stupid reasons.
True.
Like,
they
put a bit of the Notvist on mine. And I was like, yeah, I've been well into 13 and God, but I've never checked out any Notvist stuff. So that was good. Enjoyed that.
Oh, and So I Watch You From Afar,
yes.
I quite like, despite them being the sort of thing that I would normally be
very bored.
You see,
again, they're another band that get me in trouble because they are a very, very smart version of a lot of shit music.
Actually, mine's not too bad this week.
Yeah,
it's got I've got some Shining on it.
Yeah,
off International Black Jazz Society. That's good. Mm-hmm. Juicifer, which I don't really like, but I can see why you'd think so. Mind you, I've got fucking Rise of the North Star on it. If you've not listened to Rise of the North Star, I implore you to listen to Rise of the North Star. They're dreadful. A band called Angel Dust, a song called Toxic Boombox off the album Rock the Fuck On Forever. That's good. The 100, who are the most dreadful fucking like grime gent band you'll ever hear. But I'm the sort of man who can unironically enjoy that. So
that is.
It's not bad. I say it's not as bad as the time it gave me Muse or the same song twice.
I've got see another pitfall. I've got a bit of Mono on here as well, and they're like poster child for boring post rock, basically.
Yeah. Sort of shit that would make me very, very sad.
Yeah.
Sean, what's your next one?
I am very sad that E3's come and gone, and From Software have still not announced a new Armored Core game, and even when they do, which they eventually will, I'm sure they will, no one's going to care.
I don't know about that. I think you're wrong. I think that at this point, no matter what From release next, people will care because it's From.
But I already thought this when, because they've released Armored Core games after Dark Souls, and I was like, this is it, the world's ready.
Dark Souls, don't forget, it wasn't even really Dark Souls 2 that properly made From. It was Bloodborne, I think.
You might be right there.
That pushed them from... Because don't forget, Bloodborne came out when there wasn't really much for the PS4, so a lot of people who hadn't played...
Just got it because it was exclusive,
Hadn't played Dark Souls, hadn't played Dark Souls 2, were like, well, I want something to play on this fucking £400 box I've bought.
Yeah. My beef with this whole thing, and this is going to sound like I'm slagging off Dark Souls, and I'm not.
All right.
Is that although Armored Core is a very different game, and it's about throwing giant robots around and shooting things and listening to unusual music, there is a lot of shared DNA between it and Dark Souls. But, you know, Dark Souls, it's really hard and like you don't really know what's going on. Armored Core, it's really hard, I don't know what's going on, it's shit. And Dark Souls, the story's like really unusual and you've got to really work to find it. Like, it doesn't really feed it to you. Armored Core, story shit, I don't know what's going on, stop telling me what's going on. It's just that constantly.
From my experience, Dark Souls has always felt a tiny bit more accessible just because it, to my mind, it is a more... So Dark Souls is a fantasy game. It's a very dark fantasy game, and it's not your normal Dungeons & Dragons. It's not your normal Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, there's a lot of tropes there that are very, very standard.
Yeah.
Swords, axes, dragons, magicians, blah, 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 blah. Mm. The thing with something like an Armored Core is sci-fi is still very blown out the water, and it's still just like... So, like, your Armored Core is very different to, say, a Mech Warrior is in terms of reasons why things happen, because future science.
Yeah.
So, like, when people are just like, oh, well, my fucking mech's lopsided.
Yeah.
And it's that thing as well where, as far as I remember in Armored Core, it's like, oh, my mech's lopsided. I'm stuck in that for this mission before I can go back and change it. Whereas in Dark Souls, it's like, right, hop in. No, that's not right. Gear off. Carry on.
Yeah. Armored Core is very much about sort of pre-planning your the design of your mech, and then sort of going right in this. In a lot of cases, there is a bit of trial and error. Like, you'll do a mission, it's like, well, hang on, no, I needed, this sort of setup, so I'll go back. And then, over the course of the game, you develop a whole set of different,
which is the same as Dark Souls, but I think you can be a little bit more reactive in Dark Souls, like, to the point where you can take stuff off mid-fight if you want to.
Yeah.
And also, let's not forget that the Armored Core games universally look like fucking shit.
I don't know. The arms forts in Four Answer are pretty impressive. But that is, beyond that.
Yeah.
Not at a very big budget. I mean, that is what excites me, is that the next one, if it does ever happen, is actually going to have money behind it, and that will be a first for the series. So,
Well, that's the thing as well, and certainly from my point of view, I can remember, I know somewhere I saw a trailer for Armored Core 4, I think it was.
Yeah.
And the trailers look phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, the trailers are, the actual rendered assets and everything, it look absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's, for the PS3, such a difference in what you see in the trailers compared to what you actually get to control, which looks very, very flat.
Yeah,
and very, very... And, all right, Dark Souls didn't look great, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Souls didn't look great, but it had a very defined Dark Souls, dark fantasy palette to it.
Yeah.
Like, it had a style, whereas Armored Core is like, here's some mechs in a shit, badly rendered...
desert, basically.
Desert or future... future town, which looks really poor, and unfortunately I think that does matter to people more than maybe some people would like to admit. But that said, Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3 have been two of the better looking games, I think, on the PS4, so I don't see any particular reason why a new Armored Core couldn't look absolutely phenomenal. If you look at things like going into Irithyll in Dark Souls 3, it proves that they can do a cityscape now and actually do it justice from a distance. There's so many other games out there now that have shown how it's just... I think we're now starting to see the real difference between the PS4 and the PS3.
Yeah.
I'm just getting to the point now where when you look at PS3 graphics, you go, oh, no. that's lots worse than I remember. Because if you just fired a screenshot of a Dark Souls game up to me, like, which one's that? Genuinely, if it was just of some generic hallway or something, some dark hallway, I probably wouldn't be able to tell you. But then, it's only when you start comparing them that you go, oh, shit, hell, Dark Souls 3 does not look good, and that text is massive. And...
Yeah, I mean, Dark Souls 2, there's some really nice art direction there, but it's when you look at, when there's just a massive, stone wall or whatever, and you can see the repetition in the text.
You see the tiling.
Yeah, and it's straight away, you're like, they don't do that anymore, at least not some, or it's, covered up with all clever bump mapping and...
Yeah. Well, I mean, textures have been able to get bigger as well, haven't they? So they can fix up all that shit.
Yeah. Listen to us, fucking Digital Foundry, mate.
Yeah, and as a result of that, now games are worth buying. They weren't previously.
No, they weren't. They used to look bad, and now they're good.
Did you see fucking Digital Foundry did a Digital Foundry on the fucking Resident Evil demo?
Why? What did they learn?
Well, that's it. I can't fathom a reason why... Because, one, all right, it's a tech demo. I get that. But it's free. So no one's going, well, I don't know if I'm going to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. Two, it's the only version. So it's not like you can use Digital Foundry to go, well, PC version runs better.
Yeah.
And three, it's a demo.
Can you imagine if Digital Foundry existed in the days of, arcade to Spectrum conversions? And they were like, well, this is basically a waste of everyone's time.
This one's only got 8 colours. The change from a full-size CRT TV resolution to 320 by 240 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. 8 colours. It's not quite the same. Like,
when Digital Foundry first appeared, their whole thing was basically Xbox 360 to PS3 comparisons. And there was almost some merit in it, because some people owned both consoles and they would maybe on the fence about which version to get, and it would, you know, and it'd be like, look, the frame rate's really bad on the PS3 version, but it plays fine on the 360. And then, you know, there'd be occasional, they'd have the occasional foray into like, look at this smoke effect from this grenade launcher in both versions. It's a bit rubbish on the Xbox. I don't really care. And that's what they've doubled down on, that shit.
Yeah. Well, I say, like, I can remember reading the Bulletstorm Digital Foundry. Yeah. And, basically them going, the 360, so Bulletstorm was Unreal Engine, the 360 was more similar or more like the hardware that the Unreal Engine had been built to run on.
Yeah.
So they're just like, they can get more out of it, and here's some differences. And you go, oh, yeah, that does look a lot better. Well, they're the same price. Obviously, I'll pick up the better version.
Yeah.
But now we sit here, and they're tearing apart a demo that's only available on one system.
Exactly.
Just fucking, come on. we've got well away from Armored Core, haven't we?
Yeah, sorry. Armored Core's really good. I'm excited for them announcing a new one. You're not going to buy it. I'm talking to the audience. But it's your fault.
Yeah, I still don't know what I said. Armored Core, I think, is the sort of game that even if it looks fantastic and even if it blah, 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 it's the sort of game that I think I like the idea of more than I probably actually want to play.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which, to be honest, is... That. Yeah, because it's that thing. I'm just, like... Every so often, I'll be like, "I'm going to get into a new tactical RPG." That's what I'll do. I love tactical RPGs, and then I'll play about three levels of it and go, "This is fine. I'm really enjoying this." And then never ever touch it ever ever again. Did it with Front Mission? Did it with Final Fantasy Tactics?
And Final Fantasy Tactics
with the new Fire Emblem,
the fucking one as well. Oh yeah, new Fire Emblem. Yeah,
yeah. But I mean, with Fire Emblem, it's just that thing. At the moment, it just feels like. It doesn't feel like there've been any tactics in it yet.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of me than them, and I'm stronger.
Yeah.
So it's just press the buttons.
But you see, if they bring out a new Armored Core, you can be the operator. Did you ever hear about this?
No.
So in Armored Core 5, or was it? I can't remember if it was just in 5 or if it was in Verdict Day. Basically, so you could have a team of 5 people, 4 people actually in robots, and one person is the operator. Who literally operates is just looking at a top-down map of the area,
right?
And you can basically you can see where all your units are, and basically Armored Core 5 did loads of interesting stuff with radar and your sensors and stuff, and how you like different chassis had different types of radars and different sort of remote things they could plant to sort of monitor certain areas. So basically your job as the operator was to go like, right, you drop radar bits here, here and here, you drop them here and here, that'll cover these entrances and exits, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then you could see on the map when certain sensors are being triggered and go, right, there's someone at this position, go fucking have a word. And it was really exciting. Like, it's really exciting being the person who doesn't actually play the game. You just look at a map and you can bring up like little sort of picture-in-picture video feeds of what the robots are doing.
Right.
Yeah, proper good.
That sounds right. So it sounds like, more like an RTS.
But where you're shouting at your mates.
Yeah. No, I'd be into that. But as I say, like my sole experience of Armored Core is buying... I was looking around at my PS3 games, but I've clearly sold it. Getting it, turning it on, and looking at it and going, I hate this. I really don't like this at all. And that was it. Like, I just remember it being a big, ugly mess. And this I think that was... Yeah, no, I got it on your recommendation as well, so it's not even, like, before I knew people who had a decent taste in video games.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just unsalvageable.
Possibly.
That'll do. That's breaking tradition, but... Right, I am next. The next thing that's made me very sad is that I played the new Monster Hunter demo yesterday and it left me feeling a little bit nonplussed.
Why pie. It's good. It's amazing. What's your beef?
Right, here we go. Just the same again, innit? Sits back and waits.
No, because they've added weapon arts, mate. Weapon arts.
And in a normal fight,
yeah.
How many times will you use those?
Loads. And it's not just about the arts, it's about the four different styles as well.
See, again, maybe this is a Gunlance thing, because they don't seem to get them very quickly, their abilities. Like, yeah. You might get to use one of them twice in the whole fight.
Right. Yeah, that's not brilliant. And that was you playing as a striker as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We should do a quick rundown so we don't start using terms that make no sense. Monster Hunter, a game where you run around hunting monsters with your friends. They've now added this thing, so there's, for each of the game's 9 weapons? No, it's more than that, isn't it?
No, 16?
Yeah, fuck. There's now 4 different modes you can play them in. So you've got Guild, which is how the weapon has always behaved in the last couple of games. You've got Striker, which is the same move set. Slightly limited move set, but you get more of these weapon arts. We'll come to them in a second. And then you've got Aerial, which only gives you 1 weapon art. But your dodge is replaced by a little hop, and you can jump onto enemies and then jump off them and then do really smart aerial attacks. And then there's Adept, which is where you do, if you do like a perfect dodge or a block, so like exactly as, you know, like a parry in Dark Souls or whatever, you get a smart counter-attack move. Within those, you then get to use these weapon arts as well, which are just like special abilities that charge up as you hit the monster, and then once you've hit them enough times, you unleash it. And like most of them just have one that's like, hit it harder. And then sometimes they have like weird buffs and stuff. I find it really interesting because I'm really enjoying sort of going between, like sort of trying to be an adept, but obviously that's for pros and therefore not me. The aerial one I'm really enjoying because you just like, basically it just gives you this extra level of freedom and like just being able to hop onto the monster and then jump off it and then fucking smash down onto it is hilarious.
The thing I've found, the weapon arts, you use them by building up a little meter and then tapping on them to make them go.
Yep.
Which is fine. You build up that meter by attacking them, correct?
Yep.
That's fine, but certainly the way I've always played Gunlance is more as a tank.
Right.
Like, I always feel like my ability, because I'm one of the two, three classes that has a shield.
Mm.
I've always felt like my job is getting in there and just standing very still and taking the aggro while other people kind of wade in.
But surely the answer then is that you play as adept and then you get good at your perfect blocks and then you can smash out a load of counters.
I was just thinking that actually, because I'd not had a good, because I wanted to, because I know you'd been going, oh, weapon arts are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, right, well, I'm going to use the ability that gives me more weapon arts and lets me use them more often.
I say weapon arts are amazing. I mean, this whole new thing and having these 4 different movesets to choose from.
But my experience went into the tutorial, which is a first for a fucking Monster Hunter game.
Yeah.
My first experience was, you can use your special weapon arts now, but make sure you use them in the right circumstances. So I went, okay, press the button. Then that locked my character in place for absolutely ages, and then the monster knocked me over, and that was the end of it.
It's a shame, because the tutorials in that demo are actually quite extensive.
Mm.
But then they just stop short of, also, here is how you're supposed to use
arts. I didn't get to see what it did.
Yeah.
Either there's very little visual feedback on some of them working, or they were missing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, like when I was playing as the heavy bowgun, which is the other thing I tend to like, one of them is just like a big explosion.
Yeah,
but it's weird. Like it explodes in midair, but if it hits the ground or a wall, it doesn't go off. So you have to hit the monster with it or above it, so it'll explode. That's fine, but when the explosion goes off, you've got no idea as to whether it's worked or not. For example, again, if you play Monster Hunter a lot and you played as Gunlance, you'll know about Wyvern's Fire, which is their charge up attack thing.
Yeah.
Weapon arts are kind of an extension of that, in that there's like a special ability that has a a cool down after you've used it and takes a little bit of time to kind of wind up, but is super powerful. But the thing with Wyvern's Fire is 9 times out of 10, using that will knock the enemy over.
Yeah.
Some of these, it was like, well, the explosion went off. I don't know if anything came of that.
Not so much feedback from it.
Yeah, not so much feedback. And as I say, my experience of trying to use the first two was just getting knocked over while they were charging up, which means that you never really get to see what they do. I do, and again, this might just be Gunlance stuff, but it doesn't feel like in single player you're ever going to get a chance to use them because you've got nobody to take the aggro for you.
That's
while
what your palicos are for.
Well, yeah, but it takes fucking... Well, and certainly in 4, it took long enough to get one of those, didn't it?
Did it? I thought you just had one right off the bat.
Maybe it's getting the second one that took a long time.
Yeah, I think so.
But either way, it takes... You know what I mean? I worry that you're not going to have...
Yeah.
...enough time to... Because, like, in the demo...
I mean, my answer to that is I really like playing with the bow and arrow, but I never bother with it when I'm on my own. So
that's
I always use longsword when I'm soloing, and then if I'm with other people, I get the bow out.
Which brings me on to my next thing, is that I thought, maybe this is the time I move away from Gunlance. Mm-hmm. I've always been Gunlance since 3. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's time to try something else. Mm-hmm. And I just don't really get on with anything else. But then that's 200 hours of just using the Gunlance. So I don't know. And then it was like, because again, like, you know how we've always said, like the Souls game, your first Souls game is always the most interesting one because it's the one where you learn how everything works.
Yeah.
After that, it's just like, oh, it's this but this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's humanity but this happens. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, right, we're gonna do this monster. It's the Great Jaggy, except it stands on its tail sometimes.
Yeah, there is a bit of that.
Again,
running out of ideas
for a third time
for the monsters themselves. Yeah,
and there's that a little bit. But to be fair. At the same time, I do wonder if you remember, you and I weren't unenthused is the wrong word, but we weren't massively excited about the Dark Souls 3 demo.
No.
And I was going to write this for Midnight Resistance, but I'll probably just say it because I'm never going to write
it.
And
that's the problem with writing things.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's easier just say them into a microphone and then fuck off.
The reason I think the demo for Dark Souls 3 was a bit weird was because what people like you and I want from Dark Souls, that demo could never give us, because that demo just gives us an hour or like a 10-minute slice of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, yeah, combat is still the same, there's enemies, blah, 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 blah. There's very little story in there, there's very little... It doesn't give you any of those things, that sense of progression that is what you want from a Dark Souls game. Like, I played that and I didn't feel like I'd learned anything more about the Dark Souls universe that I knew. All I knew is, it's another bit of Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Like, again. And I think it's maybe the same with this, playing a contextless lump of Monster Hunter 3 where, like, your health and your stamina bars basically stretch off the edge of the screen.
Mm.
You're in ludicrous Space Marine armor from the get-go. It loses that, and this isn't necessarily the demo's fault, because a demo is just it's a demonstration of a product.
Yeah.
We're not asking them, but it's just, here's a little snapshot.
Yeah.
And Monster Hunter's not about the short term. It's about It's about like that gear that we were using, that you use in the demo. That's like 70, 80 hours worth of game there, probably, before you're using that equipment.
Yeah.
And like, you can tell that it's, because that's the other thing as well, that gear that we were using, you're not going to be spending that long knocking over a fucking Great Jaggy analog with that stuff, because it took so long.
Yeah, it did. I mean, the weird thing about the Monster Hunter demos is, like, so much of Monster Hunter is in the planning as well, and it's like, well, I know I'm facing something that does fire damage and is weak to ice, therefore I want an ice weapon and I want armor that's good against fire or whatever.
Mm.
Whereas this is just like, pick a pre-made character.
Yeah.
You've no idea what type of damage it's doing or what it's good against. Or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this enemy confuses you and puts you to sleep, and you've got nothing. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
So it's that, and I just wasn't feeling it. I'm sure that would go away if I played the full thing. The thing that concerns me a little bit more is my complete inability to engage with any of the other weapons other than the Gunlance, and feeling like maybe the Gunlance has got a little bit gypped when it comes to the weapon arts.
Yeah.
Maybe. As I say, like, because I was watching you guys, and, like, you were, like, jumping in the air and spinning round and hitting things with your sword.
I was having a very good time.
Yeah, all this was going on. I was like, in about 10 minutes, I'll be able to do something.
I'll join in. Yeah.
Right, I'm ready to do it. Oh, he's knocked me over.
Oh. Yeah.
Wait again. So, yeah. I'll try a few other weapons. I think I got on with the longsword, actually, at some point.
Longsword is fucking brilliant. I really like the longsword.
So I'll give that another go. For some reason, I got really annoyed by the being knocked over thing as well. Like, I'm not... I think the biggest thing for me is every Monster Hunter game I've ever played, I've used with an auto-guard gem on.
Ah, right.
Like, flat out from just the first thing I do is get an auto-guard gem, however you need to do it.
Yeah.
So that if you're not pressing anything and an enemy hits you, you just block it and it's no problem.
Yeah, yeah. So, if you miss having a shield, the charge blade is a lot of fun.
Right.
Because that has a shield and then it also has this... Basically, it's like you get quick successive hits on the enemies, it then charges it up and then you sort of hold... R and press A, and that sort of stores some of the charge. And when you've got it up to 5, you then transform the whole thing into a giant fucking axe and throw magic around with it.
That sounds a little bit complicated.
It's well good. That's why it's fun. Yeah, but it's no more complicated than the gun lance. Fucking hell,
that gun lance is dead simple.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, you just spent ages using it.
No, it's dead simple, right? You've got a shield, that's no problem. You've got your three different types of... three different ranges of ammo and your three different spreads. That's all simple. Then from there, you've got your two different modes. You've got your Wyvern's Fire, which is a kind of charge attack. Dead easy. No, you're right.
Yeah, and then when you go into the combos, it's like, oh yeah, and if you press this button during this part of the combo, it'll shoot upwards, but if you do it in this part, it'll shoot... Or, like, just flat.
Don't forget the active reloading.
And then,
as well.
Yeah, and then you've also got the active reloading and all that shit and hopping between your thrusts. Loads to it.
Dead simple.
But there's that much to every weapon in the game, and that's why it's fucking ace.
Yeah, I know. I don't know, like, in the last, I don't know, couple of years or so, my ability or want to learn games to that depth has just vanished.
Mm.
Like, I think it's why I've not engaged as much with Dark Souls 2 and 3 after 1.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, basically after 1, I was just like... It's like doing, like, running a marathon or something, or doing whatever thing is, like, right at the limit of your ability and you find really difficult, and you finish it and you're really proud of the fact that you've done it.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, I'm really proud of that, that was cool that I did that. And someone goes, do you want to do it again? And you go, nope. never, ever again. That's me. That's my experience of that. Done with.
Yeah.
So I'd just rather play a fucking 10-hour thing where you play a man with a beard and he jumps over a box and punches another bad lad in the face. Far rather play that. I don't know, I'll come back to it, I will come back to it, and I'm going to give the other weapons a shot, but at the moment it just feels like the same experience I've had with 3 and with 4, and it just makes me very sad.
I'm very sad that I didn't know who, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, Ivor Palsdottir was. I don't know who she was, and I have publicly embarrassed myself because she appeared on the God of War reveal at E3 this year, and she was making unusual grunting noises, and I just joined in with the throng of people being like, haha, look at the funny grunting lady, that's weird. And that's not me.
Alors, allez-y.
Bonne chance.
Bonne chance. Bonne chance.
Merci.
Happy. That's all we're
there. Roger, roll me now. Look at the wasteland, just about my kills tonight. We're all sleep, we'll have a silent circumcision. Your blood is thinner in my head, running cold pain. Let me, Rachel, run this back.
Je me demande quand même si elle a un petit ami.
Est-ce que tu dis?
Thunder, destroy me.
C'est quoi ça?
Yeah, this was the thing that most surprised me about this. Mm. So, actually, it was a couple of days after the Sony conference, I think. Mm. Andy, of also a member of the... are you ready for this? Andy, the other member of the Sad Fam. That's what we're called.
Fucking...
was talking about the God of War trailer, and I said, oh, actually, I've not seen it, because obviously only a loser would stay up for the Sony conference. So I said, oh, I've not seen it. And you, out of nowhere, was just like, Chris, you've got to see the grunting woman. So I assumed it was something in the demo, in the trailer. Watched the entire trailer through and was like, "There's just grunting men. There's no grunting, and a grunting ogre." Yeah. And Andy said, "Ah, yeah, you need to watch the full like orchestral intro they did to it." Mm-hmm. So I'm watching it, and then along comes a lady playing a kind of Faroese drum thing, the name of which I don't know, and. She, all right, admittedly, the noises that she made were, she wasn't singing by any kind of traditional standard, but have you never heard a beatboxer?
So, this is a context thing, right? If this had come up on my Discover Weekly, for example, like, obviously it would still, that bit of my brain was like, I've not heard this before, would still have triggered, but I'd have just been like, oh, what's this? This is interesting. And that would have been fine. But just because it's a video games conference, you don't expect this stuff.
So basically what you're saying is your brain went, oh no, culture.
Yeah, basically. It was like, you know, if you spat
your Mountain Dew all over the place.
It's like say it was the same thing, a video games conference, and, you know, out of nowhere, Joanna Newsom turned up. I would have been like, fucking hell, they got some woman with a weird, shrieky voice. Even though, I mean, the grand scheme of things, Joanna Newsom's voice is not that weird or shrieky. But to a lot of people, she is.
Yeah, Ivar Palsdottir has also got a weird, shrieky voice.
Okay, good.
as she showed at the end of that, but...
in that context, you just don't expect anything even remotely challenging, you know?
I suppose what I found so strange about it was just... Like, you like weirder shit than I like. And, like, given how with everything else, you're just like, well, why can't people just like the thing they like?
Yeah.
What's the problem with me not liking normal Coke and only liking Fancy Lad's Coke?
That is a problem.
So, like, it was especially, like, even 2 days later, like, the novelty hadn't worn off.
No, exactly. It was just the shock of it. I mean, the whole orchestra thing was a cool move. Like, there was,
and they were very good as well. I mean, I don't know whether it was the orchestra, because I think she is part of or has worked with the Faroese, because she's from the Faroe Islands.
Yeah,
and I think she's worked. I only know who she is because of doing music technology.
Yeah,
I think she's done stuff with the Faroese National Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume that's going to be... It's surely going to be cheaper to use something like the Los Angeles Symphony or something like that than fly the entire orchestra over. But, yeah, I mean, admittedly, I don't know an awful lot about the actual style of vocal stuff that she's doing, but she has done... See, again, I suppose it's a bit weird for me because I know that she does that kind of odd, guttural, kind of rhythmic singing, and it's... It's not throat singing.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, because obviously that's where my mind first went in terms of, like, obviously sort of unusual vocal stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, and I was a bit like, well, this is obviously just a thing I've not seen. Like, I don't think she's made up this vocal style for the God of War trailer. this is probably an established thing that I'm unaware of. But yeah, just very much caught me off guard.
Very odd. Very, very odd. As I say, just wouldn't necessarily... Because, as I say, some of the things... I mean, for people on this listen to this won't necessarily understand, but some of the things that I've had on in my car as we've driven to and from places, and you're like, listen to this, right? It's this guy, right? And he's got a mental disorder, and he's released these 7 albums, and they're all, like, pressed onto vinyl, but then the vinyl's, like, left in a garden for a week, and then they record that onto a dictaphone, and then they sell that. They sell the dictaphone, and then you have to rip it to MP3. It's good, isn't it? so that, for just what amounted to a woman with a cough...
Yeah, I mean, maybe it speaks more to what I expect from expensive video game conferences, I think.
Yeah,
I'm blaming it on that.
You don't necessarily expect the freak show, I suppose, do you?
No.
But, I mean, it's cool that they were using some elements of... Because, correct, so the new God of War is more Norse mythology than Greek, correct? See, that's cool, because I'm more into... after our trip to Glasgow, big into Norse things now. Well,
just because,
you know,
we had some, you had some sausage for breakfast.
I had some very good sausage and beetroot. Mate, anywhere I can have beetroot for breakfast, I'm all right. But I've always preferred Norse mythology. I think it's I've always found it a bit more interesting. It's a little bit cliche now. It's a little bit fucking steampunk. But not Norse mythology is Norse mythology is steampunk. It's just,
I know what you mean. It's similar. Yeah.
But like all the Elder Scrolls game, I've always played a Nord. Because Nords are the closest to, like, basically orc barbarian characters, which is what I always am in everything ever, because hitting things the hardest is the best. So that's more interesting, and I like the fact that they were actually using something that's actually relevant to that country's culture,
mm-hmm.
Or that area's culture, that culture's culture. And actually using somebody... I mean, she has won awards. And she's like a... Excuse me. Iceland's equivalent to the BAFTAs, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, best singer and things like that, which apparently is very unusual because she's not from Iceland. She's from the Faroe Islands. I think it's the Nordic Music Awards or something similar to that. I should have actually looked that up. But apparently it's very unusual because normally only Icelandic acts win.
Right.
It's kind of a bit of a bone of contention. But I mean, Ivar Palsdottir, if you are in any way interested in unusual music, I'd recommend checking her out, because everything you listen to of hers, she's done stuff with the jazz group Yggdrasil.
Mm-hmm.
She did a...
Yggdrasil, of course it's called that.
Yeah.
Tree of Life, mate.
She did an album with a rock band, the name of whom I can't remember, but they're not great. But now she does, like, to be honest, what you would probably think of if you thought of Icelandic pop music.
Okay.
Like, it's a bit Bjork.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And, like, the cool thing about her stuff is whenever you put it on, there's you never quite know what you're going to expect, because it could just be kind of... 80s synth pop, or it could be some mad woman gargling with a drum, and both are equally as cool. This is weird, right? I'm doing this show with you, with Andy. It's easy to do the contrived "that makes me very sad" bit at the end. With you, maybe it's because the sun's shining and I've got less going on in my life, but I've just had a nice chat about a singer that I really like.
Well, I'm very sorry. That makes me very sad.
Last one.
Fuck.
Don't worry, we're on the home straight now. Thing that makes me very sad, and this isn't a new thing, it's just a thing that's been upsetting me this week, is that the streets, it's kind of hit home this week, that the streets won't be recording any new music anymore.
What is your thing with the streets, man? I'm being down on them. My only reason for really not liking the streets is that Dry Your Eyes came out literally the week that my first proper relationship ended, and rather than like really appreciating it, I just sort of resented it for some reason. I said, "No, fuck off! You don't know how I feel."
he's got a good dog in that video.
He has got a good dog in the video.
Yeah.
Very well behaved.
So other than that, what is your... Forgetting what I have endlessly told you about the streets, what is your understanding and knowledge of the streets?
Not a lot, other than basically the singles. So
right. Dry Your Eyes, Fit But You Know It. So
I mean, I've seen him in a couple of interviews, and I was like, fair dues, he seems actually quite likeable.
Here's the thing about the streets. Number one, the streets. Mike Skinner, who is the streets,
all of them.
is a little bit older than I am.
Okay.
He's kind of mid-30s, something like that. But a lot
little bit older than you.
Well, you know what I mean? He's not 80, is he? Like, he's just... we're of vaguely the same generation.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff he talks about in the first album, Original Pirate Material, is... strikes home with, like, a lot of my experiences as a 16 to kind of 20-year-old.
Yeah.
I was a bit younger than that when the first album came out, but, like, he talks about... working at JD, he talks about people driving driving Vauxhall Novas. My friend had a Vauxhall Nova and worked in JD. like, what's interesting is, as you know, he was always kind of tarred as being chav music.
Which is unfair.
Mainly on the back of Fit But You Know It.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting, all the interviews he's ever done, he describes himself as what he calls Barrett class, which is effectively Barrett Holmes... the kind of, during the 90s housing boom, where you could very, very easily get 110% mortgage if you tried. Mm-hmm. People who were lower middle class, effectively. They weren't bottom barrel poor.
People that the Tories thought they were, like, bringing up, basically.
Yeah. They did kind of quite skilled jobs, but weren't doctors or policemen or anything like that. Probably went on holiday to Spain once a year with the family. A little bit of money knocking about, but not rich by any stretch of the imagination.
They still
went to the local state school, etc., etc. And that is his life. And that, especially in a small town, he's from Birmingham, not London, as people tend to think.
I mean, he doesn't have the accent, does he? Which I guess
not really. And I believe he does affect. I think he spent a lot of time in London and has kind of picked up that accent a little bit more, and maybe affect it a little bit for his music.
Yeah.
So that first album came out and it spoke to me as a young sort of teenage bit of a stoner.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of spoke to me. There's some very clever lyrics as well. Mm-hmm. He got known for a song about. Oh, I really want to shag you, but you're too fit, and you know that you're too fit for me. But, you know, there's things like lines in the first album. I can't remember the name of the track now off the top of my head, but the line, we first met through a shared view, she loved me and I did too. it's really clever. Like, if you listen to Turn the Page, which is the first track, it's a song about... it's a song about culture and how Mike Skinner sees himself as a person in the kind of... growing up within an urban environment, and it's fascinating. That's this first album is all about being a teenager and being bored and trying to understand how you feel about where you live and your place in the world.
Yeah.
And then the second album was the same thing, sort of, but it was a concept album, believe it or not. And it's a concept album. Basically, the entire story is that a man has saved up £1,000. And then he loses that £1,000. And there's other things going on in his life at the same time. He meets and starts a relationship. That relationship then breaks down. He has fallouts with friends over the money and other things. And then the album ends with... There's a good and a bad ending to the album.
Right.
I'll get onto production. But I think you'd enjoy the last album, the last track, because it's... identical, apart from the good ending has just some very light keys over the top of it, which can just in a major key and completely change the feel of it.
Right.
So it goes from this story about how his mate, who he's fallen out with, he phones up to try and make amends. He tells him to fuck off, gets a TV repairman round to fix his TV, which is also broken. Then has a fight with the TV repairman who tries to diddle him out of money.
Right.
And then the album ends with him going, I don't need fucking anybody. Everybody's fucked me off. The good ending ends with him... it's identical up to the point where his friend phones up to make amends.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides to actually listen to him and goes, yeah, we need friends. To survive in this world, we need friends. Like, there's a line about, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's along the lines of, I've got my problems, but I can't expect my friends to be there 100% of the time because they've got their own shit dealing with it. So it's enough trying to keep your own head above.
Mm-hmm.
He decides to make amends with his friend. His friend comes around to help him fix the TV. He finds that the money has fallen down the back of the TV and broken it. That's the good ending.
Right.
Then, obviously, between the second and third album, that's when Dry Your Eyes broke and made him a millionaire. The third album is literally about him dealing very badly with being famous. there's just songs.
Like by his own admission, sort of.
There's a song in there about how girls weren't interested in you before you were famous.
Right.
The song's called When You Wasn't Famous.
Right.
There's songs there about like being so coked up you don't know what's going on. Right. The song's about fighting people who are selling fake street merchandise.
Right.
The one moment where he steps down and actually examines himself is on the song about his dad dying.
Right.
Which is, if you were cynical, you'd say, is that Dry Your Eyes too? But it's a tremendous, tremendous song. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the rest of the album is a man who now has a very high opinion of himself, having a high opinion of himself, allegedly talking about Rachel Stevens, I think, the song Praying Out, when he talks about, again, just being a mess on drugs.
Yeah.
Or is it on When You Wasn't Famous? But there's lines about talking about people being on CD UK.
Right.
Which kind of dates it now. But talks about the states that they were in. Then the fourth album, there was a massive gap between the third and the fourth album, and in that time he got married and completely withdrew kind of from the public eye. Because you remember kind of around Dry Your Eyes, that period, he was in the papers a lot. He seemed like the world's biggest celebrity at times. Hated it, disappeared, got married to, you know, a non-celebrity, as it were. Had a child, at least one child.
Yeah.
And then the fourth album was just about that, and about reflecting on a life, and kind of there's almost like parables in there as well, like stories about you know, a father and a son going out and experiencing life together, and the dad trying to teach the son things. There's songs in there, I say, about how looking back on the mess that the last few years were, and about living a quiet life. I mean, one of the videos, I think he walked, I can't remember exactly what he did, but he walked around like the north coast of France or whatever. And the video is just him walking around talking about how living a quiet life is quite nice, actually. And then the fifth album is basically going, look at all this vintage synth equipment I have. It's called Computers and Blues. Like, he was just like going, look at all this. I am a sound geek, and now I have all this weird stuff, and I can make weird noises with it. And there's still, like, you know, the songs in there. I think he released OMG as a single, which is really nice, because it's a whole song about him going, about this girl, him saying, oh, I've noticed on Facebook that you say you're in a relationship now, and that's fine, but I thought what me and you had was working. I thought those dates we went on were really nice, actually. And then at the end of the song, he realises, and then I noticed the notification, an OMG, that person you're relationship with, it's me.
Right.
And that's really nice. And then, like, that was it. That was the end of the streets, and he just went, right, I'm done now. And he's done that nice Fawlty Towers Black Books thing of going, no, that's all my ideas.
Okay.
Got nothing else. That's finished now. I've got nothing else.
I've got a lot of time for people who do that.
Yeah.
Flight of the Conchords is the one that always annoys me. When everyone's like, oh, I should do another Flight of the Conchords. Why don't you do another series of Flight of the Conchords?
Because Series 2 was rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, it had its moments, but it clearly run its course, and that was that. So, fine.
Yeah, and I mean, they'd been doing Flight of the Conchords a long time before they had the TV show as well.
Yeah, because that first series was basically all the songs they'd been touring for, like, years, wasn't it?
Yeah, as I remember, after that first series, they were like, does anybody else know how to write songs, because we've done all our songs. We need some new ones. But no, and then the other thing with the streets is his production style is both his production and his songwriting is really unusual, in that he uses very odd, very noisy drum samples quite a lot. Like, a lot of I assume they're going to be cut from old soul records and stuff like that, 'cause there's quite a lot to them. But he has an unusual way of, a lot of his music is only very, it's not far off being out of time.
Right.
But it never quite is.
Yeah.
Which is, as you know, is a very hard thing to do when you're doing all programmed music.
Yeah.
but kind of, and I hate doing like beatboxy things on the radio. But if you think about like if I can't think of the track now. Oh, it's Turn the Page actually. Like the main drum beats, that is, which is just, it's not the normal kind of garage beat you'd expect.
Just a little bit syncopated and
yeah. And then over the top of that, it's got like da 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 da. So everything about it is just, it's all in time, but it sounds like it's to me, it always feels like a shoelace knot.
It's it's good when you get like it's not a weird time signature or anything. It's just a bit of unusual emphasis that sort of gives that impression, makes you go like, oh fuck, is this in fucking 7/8? No, it's just
Blinded by the Lights as well off Grand Don't Come for Free. Mm-hmm. That's in 4/4.
Right.
I know that because, well, all being well, people listening to this will have heard a dubstep version of that before this starts. but that's, again, that's in 4/4, and when you put it to like a dubstep beat or whatever, works fine, no problem. But the track sounds really, I mean, that song's about being off your face on pills in a club.
Right.
And not knowing where your friends have gone. Mm-hmm. And it feels like that. Like, the whole thing feels like flashing lights and just being really spaced out and not knowing where you are. And it's like a perfect encapsulation of what the song's trying to explain.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect for that. But anyway, my point being is, I was listening to another podcast recently, the Comedian's Comedian podcast, and the guy, Liam Williams, was being interviewed on that, and he brought up The Streets. And I thought, oh yeah, I've not listened to The Streets for a while, and over the last few days I've been through all their albums, and like I'm probably one of the world's biggest Streets fans.
Mm.
I could admit there's some not perfect stuff in there. Like, again, like what makes Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living such a, or part of what makes it such an incredible document of what it's like to be on a lot of drugs and have a lot of money as a musician is the fact that a lot of it's not very good.
Right.
Like, it's clearly, like, you can smell the cocaine on it. Well, a lot of it, I can't think of an artist that has more accurately demonstrated or chronicled their lives through their music, like each album being very indicative of it, being a snapshot of how that person feels or how what that person's life is like at that time.
Mm. It's funny what you end up identifying with sometimes, isn't it? People always laugh at me when I say that I find the in-betweeners quite relatable.
Yeah, that makes some sense.
Because it's just that phenomenon of being the kids who weren't like obviously nerdy enough to just group with all the nerds, but they weren't cool either.
Mm.
And you end up being like, it's like this sort of unmentioned,
like, just that kind of nothing between the two. Yeah.
like the legitimately unusual crowd that sort of, I'm getting basically sounding like the sort of thing I would have said when I was actually 16. Yeah, you can't put a label on me, yeah? but you know what I mean? Yeah, the sort of hovering between and not really being anything. And that's, like, in hindsight, I appreciate that. But yeah, like, watching The Inbetweeners, I was a bit like, yeah, that's sort of, like, we didn't have a Jay in the group, and we didn't have Neil either.
Mm.
So basically, we're all a cross between Sam and Will. Sam, fucking, I completely forgot his name. Will and, what are the other guys called?
Yeah.
The normal one. So we were all sort of around that. But yeah, you know, you say to people, oh yeah, you know, I found that quite relatable. Oh yeah, did you shit your pants in an exam? And it's like, no, obviously not.
No, but I am the sort of person who that would have happened.
Yeah. So yeah, in a literal sense, it doesn't describe things that happened to me, and yet I watch it and I recognise it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But no, for me, there's that. I mean, obviously, I can't relate to living in kind of, well, I can relate to being lower middle class.
Yeah, sure.
But then I've not then become I wasn't number one for ages. Then off my face on cocaine. Then didn't retreat from all the fame, and then release a kind of weird neo techno hippie album. But the first album, the first two albums, I do relate to because it does remind me of kind of my life and the people I was hanging around with at that time. And then the rest of the stuff, I just find fascinating because there's so much of Mike Skinner to that stuff. I mean, the closest thing I can think of, again, as a document of how an artist feels about itself as a collective, is fucking Saint Anger by Metallica, which is very obviously a band who don't get on anymore.
Yeah.
Or actually, Iowa by Slipknot.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Spann and his wide taste of music. Like Iowa by Slipknot, I've said before, Iowa basically, they started writing, I think, while they were still on tour from the self-titled album, which is obviously the one that made them kind of world famous. Mm-hmm. And by that point, there was 9 of them. They'd spent something like 2 years on a bus together, and from what I understand, they fucking despised each other.
Yeah, well, you would.
And you can hear it.
Yeah.
Like, the thing is dripping with poison. But, that, I mean, conversely, that's what makes... At the time, Iowa didn't review well, but I think a lot of people have gone back and gone, no, Iowa's actually really fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
If only for... Like, I can't name an angrier-sounding record. I just can't do it. But my point being, the Streets have now been dead for 5-6 years, I think, something like that. I saw them 3 times, I think, in the end on the farewell tour. And actually, one of the rowdiest crowds I've ever been in was the Streets in Liverpool.
Is he doing anything now, or is he just living off his millions?
I don't know, actually. I think he's produced bits and bobs. He started a label, I think, called The Beats, which didn't didn't last that long. I think he does some production stuff now, which makes sense. It would be perfect for him, as I say, because he's one of the few people nowadays who has, I would say, his own style.
Yeah.
He's actually 1978, so he's almost 10 years older than me.
Fuck. He's dead.
That's a thing I didn't know, and I'm actually quite excited about that.
Yeah.
He teamed up with Murkage to form a supergroup entitled Tonga Balloon Gang, and they released an eponymous 3-track EP on the 14th of November 2015. Release features additional vocals from Jammer and Big Nasty. That'll be quite good, actually.
Big Nasty.
Yeah.
He did that song with Craig David.
He did.
In which he went...
Yes, he did. That's very good. That's right. He's also remixed Slaves. So he will do fucking anything, which is quite cool. Mm. Funnily enough, do you know who did the soundtrack for the Inbetweeners movie?
No.
Mike fucking Skinner. What a wonderful full circle.
Dovetailed beautifully, hasn't it?
To bring this to a close. So there you go. The Streets are dead. And the Streets were very important to me as a teenager and a young man. And knowing that there'll probably never be anything like that, and that even if there is now, kind of, I'm now of a point where I don't think an artist could become that important a part of my life, just makes me very, very sad. Fuck it, yes, let's do a bit at the end.
Right,
this is going to be very quick because I don't know if we normally do this, but here we go. That was Being Very Sad. It's a podcast about being very sad. You can find us on Twitter at, I can't even remember now, at Being Very Sad, probably.
Can I tell you something?
Go on.
So, you know, I was following a load of Twitter accounts the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came across this one. I was like, oh, I think they've stopped doing that. I fucking unfollowed it.
Fucking, you've kept that quiet all day.
Well, I thought I just thought you weren't doing it anymore.
Well, you're obviously very fucking wrong, aren't you? It's because you hadn't bothered your ass to come on.
No, it's my fault.
Or go to averysad.website, which is probably where you'll have been to find this anyway. There is an RSS feed. But yeah, listen to that. My name's Chris at CS87. Speak to me if you want. Sean, what are you?
I am Sean Bell at Captain Toss. Don't yeah. speak to me. No, I mean you don't. Can you can if you want. I'm not very good. You know when you people tweet at you and you can't think of a funny reply, but you feel like you've been really rude.
Yeah,
and then just give them a like and walk off.
Yeah, my main problem with Snapchat, who we both are only on to follow Cammy Tone.
Yeah, because he sends like really funny videos that he's done at work.
Yeah,
and then he's like, "Well, here's me sat in my office."
Yeah, he's too funny, and there's nothing I can do, so I just have to look at them, and I feel like some weird voyeur into his life.
And occasionally screenshot them, which I found out now actually tells the sender that you screenshot.
Yeah, it's always done that, yeah.
Thank God that happened on a relatively... what's the word I'm looking for?
Innocuous. Yeah.
One.
Anyway, that'll do. I'm going to go and listen to that Tonga Balloon Gang EP, because I reckon it's going to be good.
I'm going to go and eat some food.
Lovely. Right. Fuck off.
And other disgusting noises.